CONAI, which is the Confederation of Indigenous Nations.
Good afternoon, and still you're listening to Tickling the Belly of the Beast from the heartland of Santa Cruz. This is Janaea, and I'm sorry I'm a little late today. I'm coming on at 4. I was playing some older programs for you last week and then one that occurred a while ago, but I'm just now coming in, and I'm real excited about my guest that I have with me. It is Dr. Darryl Wilson. Babe Wilson. He's been on before, and I've had a real hard time getting him back on, and he's finally able. We both have this time scheduled, and his sons are also here with us. And Dr. Darryl Wilson, he basically is a scholar, poet, and political activist, and he always calls himself a humorist, and that he is. And he, years ago, had a newspaper. What was it? No, it was a literary magazine, Arts Reach, called Dancing with the Wind. And from that experience, he noticed the healing process in children that evolved through writing. And he was a professor. Where did you teach? What schools? What universities, Dr. Wilson, did you teach in? Hi, we're just getting started here.
The last one I taught at.
Whoops, can you get a little closer to the mic there? There we go.
The last university I taught at was right in Santa Cruz, Santa Clara University.
Santa Clara University, great. And you got your PhD at the University of Arizona
University
in Native American
Arizona.
Literature.
I did undergraduate at Davis.
Can you just be, there you go. He is a little hard of hearing, so we're working on this. Thank you. And he also is the author of The Morning the Sun Went Down, which is phenomenal. It's basically, it weaves between the oral legends that, truths that he learned as a child spending years with his elders, very, very fortunate. And then his life as a contemporary Native American and how he tried to put the two value systems together. It was a phenomenal book. And also, Two Moons is about to be published as well, which is similar and goes into depth with his experiences and the Marines and how difficult it was to bring the two cultures together. And the ways in which he used his power songs that were taught.
It still didn't come together.
No, you're still working with the struggles. And yeah, that includes the world court in terms of indigenous rights. Tribal sovereignty, tribal treason. And why, as an indigenous person, you almost have to commit tribal treason just to survive as a human being with dignity and rights. Do you want to say a little bit about the tribal treason?
Yes, at this point I really would like to talk about the 1934 Indian Reorganization Act that somehow has found a seat of glory in America, even among the Native people. For some wild reason I have not been able to understand, although I've thought about it, thought about it for a long time, is why is it that the Native people who abandon their tribal council in favor of a contract written by the federal government as instructions for them to abide by, how is it they don't see that as tribal treason or cultural sedition? Either one, because both of them have to be, one of them has to be accomplished every time there is a contract between the United States government and Native people, and the government says, yes, I recognize this. They refused to recognize original tribal councils. The 1934 Indian Reorganization Act exactly did that. It says, hey, you Indians over there, here's my contract. If you take it and live by it, then I'll get you a few programs and maybe a casino or something wonderful. And so many natives run over there and grab that thing, but in the process, they are really activating cultural sedition or tribal treason. Yeah. And if you look up the words in the dictionary, get a good one. Don't get a fifth grade dictionary because they're not very good. Get a good one printed before 1974. And you'll find out the tribal tradition that is not in a treason is not in the dictionary, of course. It's in the native people. And cultural sedition is not in the dictionary either. It's in the native people.
How would you describe cultural sedition?
Both of them mean to change a government, abandon your government, accept somebody else's government. And natives do that every time they have a contract with the United States government and they have a program or two, and a job for sure, and things like that. If you look at it from this side, and it was a old traditional conference going on here, we'd have very many red flags of caution go up and about that thing. But when the government when the government looks at native rule and native law as something that was created out of an autistic people and shun that, then it's very easy for native people to think, oh, I better join the government. We're degraded already, now we're getting ostracized with our laws and rules, lower than the second class citizen, not a citizen for sure, and worse than sheep on a reservation. And sometimes you have to do those things to survive all the way through. From Christopher Columbus to this point, we have had to change, we've had to mutate, we've had to do a lot of things just to live. And we did. I think the women in the society, Native society, probably had to go through a lot more torture and changes than the men did. And I think some of them really got a wave of terror to crush them right down flat, but they got up again, and here we are. So I'm really kind of wondering, way down deep in my soul, my heart, my spirit, what position to really take? The position of survival or the position of pride?
So, in the process, the government has divided the native communities, those that have gone along to survive with the value systems of the government, and those more traditional that are following a whole different set of values.
Yes, back to the Indian Reorganization Act. Mm-hmm. I mean, right now, today, this minute, tomorrow at noon, next year at noon, there are going to be families divided over the willingness of the people to join the federal government and shun their own tribal government, a tribal government that has been a gift to the native people on this hemisphere and very long ago. In the legends, if somebody would search the legend, you'd find out that the rules and laws were given to people at the time they were created right here on this continent. Mm-hmm. And it's a long, long ancient history that Native people are supposed to be the caretakers of. Just like we're supposed to really be taking care of the earth. Well, that was true until Columbus got here. And people wonder, how did the redwood forest get over here in Santa Cruz, 400 feet tall, 40 feet across? How did those things get so big? Well, they got big because Native people took care of them, talked to them, worried for them, and everything else that you do for a child. Same with the fish. There were fish everywhere. Now there's few suckers and few bony fish here and there. In some water, if they can survive, the water is so bad.
Polluted.
Turtle couldn't live there. So there's no more game in the mountains or on the plains. And so when Columbus came here, well, how did all this get here? It didn't just get here. The Native people took care of it, nurtured it, talked with it, worried about it, just like sending somebody off to first day
for
school.
Eons, too. It wasn't just discovered, this land, by Christopher Columbus. There had been people here for centuries, millennia.
My
Can
grandma,
you say a little?
I say my grandma. I would say my dad would have been my exact grandma, not the DNA grandma. But when I was little, everybody, old and gray hair, was a nice woman, was grandma to all of us, to all the kids everywhere, was grandma. But one time when I was in first grade, I started learning about this guy, Christopher Columbus, because I had no idea what I was learning. But there was an old tribal council meeting, and old-timers sitting around there waiting for the meeting to start, and some of them were older than the hills at that time. I mean, they were ancient people. So I was telling, oh, Christopher Columbus found us. We should like that guy. And this old grandma, she looked at me, and she said, did this fellow find the sun, too? Because our homeland was no more lost than the sun was lost.
Yeah.
But Americans look at it a little different.
They certainly do. He's the hero that came over here and discovered this rich land for plundering the gold to use the resources to their advantage, not take care of the land. The whole value system was entirely different. Instead of being with the spirits of the land, the caretakers of the land, the animals, the trees, the brethren, it was to plunder and have control over.
Yes.
And you spoke quite a bit about that. And you also, as I was going over your website, Daryl,
okay,
I discovered
thanks.
That you write poetry.
I
had to do it. And if I can just read a little bit, this was Amtala, how do you pronounce that? Excuse me, Small Light Before Dawn. It's just beautiful, and it's just a sample. It's so evocative of how you live your life and your thoughts. Okay, your elders.
Elohim Jodi. Jodi's little.
Elohim, what's Jodi?
Little light just before dawn.
My favorite time. Just as dusk, that same little light. And you write, sunrise, yet a dream. Venus, still planning her ascent. Jupiter, hurrying west. On the other side, moon followed sun along their ancient path. My sleep was not of dreams, but of worry. As Pukamuka instructed us, my spirit went out to visit the vast universe, to scatter my brothers as the stars were scattered long ago. The power in the vastness churned and dreamed and breathed, and it is good. Rumbling across the silences between the stars, a thought whispered, Joji, Itami, Awi, how do you pronounce? Excuse me. Can you?
Sure.
Joji. Where? There it is. Right there.
Joji, Itami.
How do you?
Itamis is my mother's people, and Ati, Ati Jiwa is my father's grandmother's people. Talalimjoe. Talalimji. What it translates into is, little person, what bothers your deeper spirit?
What bothers your deeper spirit? Now where am I? As best as my power could answer that great energy, it said, whoops, the Christian crusade against Earth and indigenous must cease. In the presence of the vast universe, my spirit thought again and again, there must be an ending to the disease of hate, to the disease harm, and to the disease invade. There must, and it is true. The damage of the invading crusade has not healed, but bleeds with a rheumatic ache. The invading forces say, we are saviors of the wounded and bleeding. Although it is that invading force, following the will of God, that causes the constant blood flow of indigenous and gaping wounds to Mother Earth. With words infected with conniving, they make their existence seem necessary. It is not. And then you go on from there. It's so true, you do use words as bullets, as the elders told you to. And I'm curious who the Pukamuka are.
Who they are?
Yes.
The Pukamuka are the... There are a lot of old Indians everywhere. There are a gathering of Indians. Find some old ones, like me. I'm an old Indian. Old Itami, yes, my mother's people. I'm an old first people. I'm not wise. I don't have knowledge. I don't have the direct contact to the universe and the power that turns the earth around the sun and changes season. I don't have that. But that is what the Pukamuka have. They have this absolutely completeness. They're wanting nothing in their cultural makeup. They're just complete, total, absolute. And the dreamers in the societies, the wise ones, the wise dreamers, Pukamuka.
I always wondered, you had used that word once before, but what you do know about is Haiduzi Law, the title of your blog, and the power. Haiduzi Law.
Haiduzi Law is a very beautiful expression. And it's in my mother's language, my grandmother's language. Hey means thought. Dutsi, thinking. La, the final outcome of thought thinking. Hey Dutsi La. And Hey Dutsi La got to be I searched for that in my language, and it was a long search. But it started, something started to hunt for that word long ago when I was at UC Davis. I was reading a book in anthropology, and the book put a reference at the bottom, you know, like college books do, to go to this book and this page in this library. So I went, found that page, or those pages. It was Jaime de Angulo, the Spanish man who came and lived among my people. He wrote an article that was published in the title to the article was, Do Indians Think? And it went on and on and on about,
wow,
maybe this, maybe that. But the final answer that he produced for college consumption was that, yes, it did think, but it takes 25 Indians to think one thought. And then it takes 25 Indians to react to that thought. And I said, this guy must have been drunk when he wrote about this, because it has nothing to do with my people, with the elder people, with the Pukamuka.
Quite the contrary. So it's deep reflection.
So I started looking in anthropology, and I really
became discipline.
I just joined the other side of anthropology at several points, because we're number one in linguists too. Hamid Yangul was a linguist. One thing, another thing, many things, but another thing is that when they were doing salvage research, they called it, into the native people now, I think the language, the words, the meaning, so many words are just ignored or omitted, and it was a deliberate omission. I could tell because it was not just my language. It was a Karuk language. Mm-hmm. It was a Hopi language. Mm-hmm. And other languages that I had been studying at that point. And giving Native people credit for thinking was just not something that was born in America. Mm-hmm. It was born before America. And it came here with Christopher Columbus, and it stayed just like Indian stays. We're not Indians. Christopher Columbus might have said it first, might have wrote it down first, but that didn't change us. It just established himself. But I was on a search for a word, a meaning, a something, because I was a little disgusted with Angulo's article. Mm-hmm. At that point, and I searched and went home and talked with the oldest people I could find, and went back down to the college and went to the library and went home again, and I could piece this thing together. I could piece this thing together after talking with the elder people whose first language is Isati. They would tell me, yes, that's almost true, but no, that's not quite right. No, say it again. Think it again. Get a better word. So I really worked on Heidutsila, and I got it. The old timers just gave it to me, the meaning, the purpose, the intent was given to me, because they knew I was after Hamid Yangulu's article, Do Indians Think? And Heidutsila is a perfect form of thought. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't take 25 people to do that thinking either. Heidutsila means thought thinking and the outcome of that thought. Then I got started on Inalumquatmi, but that's another story.
But, and what does it mean exactly? It's thought. And then, what do you do with the thought? It creates.
Well, here's how it comes to me, and here's what I do.
You worked hard to get that definition
and understanding
and practice. It's like nothing I had ever heard before.
There's not many of us left on this continent. Used to be millions of people on this continent who were born to make a connection with the universe, and usually before dawn. And the old-timer said, go out, talk with the universe, it's your friend. Don't treat it like a stranger. So I do that nowadays. I go out early. Sometimes I wake up everybody, but I go out early and talk with the universe. And it's the perfect way to talk to the universe. Be friends, yes. But talk with the universe with your heart, not with your mouth. With your heart and with Hedutsila. When your heart has the thought created in your mind, using Hedutsila, cast that thought into the universe. Mm-hmm. And there it is for the universe to work with anymore. Mm-hmm. You're kind of absolved from this thing for a while because the universe is taking on the position that you asked them to. That you need. You didn't ask them because it was just fun asking questions.
Right.
You ask them because it's absolutely necessary.
For survival almost, and for
that's
the mind,
what they call
for growth.
It good talk. Good mm-hmm. talk with the universe. Talk good about everything and about everybody, even your deadly enemy. Ask for him to have a better heart too, or her, mm-hmm. whoever it might be.
Mm-hmm. And the necessity of being out in Mother, in nature, amplifies that ability to connect with the truth, because it is there. We are trained to be so busy talking and looking outside of ourselves for being distracted that few of us have the opportunity to sit by a fire and really listen to its crackling, or listen to the howling of a wolf, and to just be there with nature and ask, be in the mother. That way of life, not so long ago, was common. And you're the first person I've ever met to speak about it. In my heart, I sense that. That ability, and things are carried on the wind. You know, someone catches your thought later, or the question is answered somehow.
Yes, the good talk with the universe is all about things that are not like they should be.
And yes.
So many things that are today
backwards.
Worse than backwards. I have a couple of other words.
Go for it.
Some adjectives. Adjectives too, but it's worse than that. Confusion compounded by ignorance, ruled by arrogance.
Yeah. Oh. And I loved what you wrote in Two Moons about the connection with the Tini Hua, the power that you connect with through an animal or through a tree, I'm not really sure if I understood it correctly, and how important it is as a young man to go out and have that with you. And then within the world, throughout your life, you don't feel any real vulnerability. You always know you have that spirit with you that comes from the powers of the land, of the universe, and then the stars, the other connection on in the heavenly realm. They're connections. That, and we're in the middle between the heavenly realm and the earth.
Yes, that,
and that's our right.
That's a direct connection. There is an absolute direct connection to the universe, from Native people to the universe. My boys missed out on that ceremony when they were the right age. I went to the University of California, and we just were taking that study for college study. It took us out of the homeland, and we were like transplanted somewhere in this strange place. Boy, going to campus this first day terrorized me really bad. And when we went home, and then the old timers sent us back down. I went home again. They sent us back down.
Get me out of here.
The day was three times. The third time they sent me back, I said, okay, I'll stay. But they gave me reason to go there, too. They said, you have to learn how to use words like bullets, because that's the way America uses their language against us.
That's why so much land was stolen and taken through the legal laws, through the laws that were written. You had to they had to be interpreted. Your people didn't write laws that were manipulative.
There were not any laws written on paper.
No.
With a Sharpie pencil, for sure. But rules and laws and legends written in the rocks all through the mountains.
Yeah.
The anthropologists go over and look at it, and they say, some goofy child, autistic or something, did this. And couldn't complete this. Incomplete. That way Indians are incomplete. And things like that, you shrug it off because they do not understand the picture that's written in the rock is telling an important part of the history of the universe and the history of this earth.
Yeah. For future generations to be able to understand.
That would really be nice. I'm working on that too. I really would like to have a lot of people get interested in the rock writing. It's not just art, it's history. Like the Mayan in the south had entire walls of the city with pictures of their history written right into it. They're still there. And every anthropologist in the world run down and translate it, write a book about it. They didn't know anything about it before they saw it, and they didn't know any more after they wrote their book.
Sometimes it's just the fame and discovery. Just saying they saw something without any understanding or time spent with it and with the people that do know. And respecting that, sometimes it's best left secret or just quiet. And your elders really saw the loss of their land and their way of life. And you yourself write about being able to roam freely, run into the creek, see many, many salmon, run freely without any fear, be in the mountain, really connect with all that's around you. And then as more and more people started coming into your area, buying up the land, fences were created. And I remember, as you said this once before, Uncle Ramsey, your uncle, had said that, oh, they're building fences around themselves. Oh, now they're building fences around us. We're being, as well as the animals. That whole way of life, things became monetized. Everything was for money.
I was just going to say that that man who came from a strange country and came to the homeland and had some wire and built a wire fence around himself. And all of the people were laughing at him. He was something wrong with him. He fenced himself in. What kind of person could that be?
Property.
And the next year, he built a little bigger fence, and the Indians helped him build the fence and laughed about how he built the fence around him. Again, something wrong with this guy. The next year, he made his fence a little bit bigger. And today, where that thing started, it's called Goose Valley. It's 130,000 beautiful acres the native people cannot walk on it.
Oh no.
It's fenced in.
Oh no.
That's the ending of that story is just an ugliness that nobody could possibly prepare for,
or have
that
predicted.
Came across the ocean to this place called America now. And when I look back, and I look back a lot, and I go through history a lot, and I look forward a lot, and I said, okay, here's the best way I can explain the damage, instant, continuous damage that was done to the culture and tradition and human body here. The first Christopher Columbus, Tower One, Hernan Cortez, Tower Two. And if that doesn't work, I say Christopher Columbus, Nagasaki. Hernan Cortez, Hiroshima. That's the style of the destruction.
It's brutal. Very brutal.
Well, we're really kind of lucky to be alive, and there are people sitting out there somewhere right now, probably in a bar, saying, oh, we should have killed them all. They're still thinking that.
And you experienced some of that thinking as a Marine. And Two Moons, you write that as a young boy, you left your land. You were taken from your family when your mother passed away. And then when you graduated from high school, you went down to Santa Barbara and joined the Marines. And then you went to Okinawa and learned the ways that of killing and the mindset of looking at people as different so that you could kill them. But you worked with the Japanese. You were able to take photos, pictures
of different sites. I was not very proud of those photos either because I was 17. I was in the Marine Corps, 17. On Okinawa, I was 17. A month after I arrived there, I turned 18. Back in those days, you know, it was just like Shanghaiing somebody, put them on a ship to take them.
Exactly.
Wherever you're going.
And you were Shanghai, so to speak, and used. But you could see what was going on. You began to understand the mindset of, I guess, colonization and what had happened to your people and still is happening.
Well, you know, the people that the Oriental people that I was sent among, I feel that same attitude towards the native people here, from the people who sent me. Go do this. They don't have any sense. They don't have any feeling. They don't understand anything, you know. So go there and help us figure out how to kill them off. That's basically what I did. I thought I was doing my
duty. That's what
honor,
you were told to
something.
Do. And yet you knew in your heart this was what was done to your people. But you're stuck. You're in there. And I love your story. Your story of boot camp, or advanced training, rather. When you had to run up the mountain, the men were dropping like flies. It was near impossible what they were asking you to do. But you remembered the songs. I think it was the bear. Was it the
bear
hummingbird
power.
Or bear power? And you told your partner, who was Polish, to sing the song. And I think you two were the only ones that made it up that hill. Just the power inherent in the songs. You know, many just have no idea. None.
Yeah, Kenny Rubinsky
that's
and
who
I
it
were
was.
together on Okinawa. And then when we came back, we went to North Carolina. Camp Lejeune, North Carolina. But we went through boot camp and advanced training, and we were almost assigned to the same place every time for some reason. And he was a Polack, everybody makes Polack jokes. And then he'd do his best to make Indian jokes. So we kind of survived a little bit, a little humanity between us. But that mountain you're talking about, it was raining, and that was the hardest
torrential
part.
Torrential rain, you said.
And so the other hard part was there's a battalion ahead of you that already went up and ground it all to mush and oil, and we come slipping and sliding, and the whole battalion would slide back down the hill slowly, slowly, piled up at the bottom. And I was just about to give up on my... I was just going to lay down. And for some reason, old chief, he gave us a mountain lion song and a bear song and snake song and an eagle song long ago when I was... before I was in school. And I thought, well, the bear power is going to help me get up this hill somehow. So I started chanting that old bear song. And it's, wah, wah, we wamate, we wamate. Wah, wah, we wamate, we wamate. And what that means, translated into English as best as I can, bear power, come to me now. Mm. And I taught the Polack song. He massacred it the first four or five tries, and we joked about that. But he started getting it, and we were chanting, going up the mountain.
With the huge backpacks.
Big backpack, 70-pound backpack, and rifles, too. When we get a little foothold and help each other up an inch or two up that mountain, it took us a long time, but we got up there.
And then what song did you use to get down?
It's longer back down. That's what they told us the day before.
Was that eagle song? Huh? Was that eagle song so you could fly down? Eagle song? What song to get down the mountain did you use?
Eagle song is...
You did.
Itui. Itui is eagle. Itwiji is baby eagle. Itwiji is any eagle. Except a bald-headed, white-tailed eagle. Mm. An eagle. Itui. It's almost the same as bear song. Itui. We wama te, we wama te, we wama te, it we. We wama te, we wama te, we wama te. What you're doing is you're begging this power to come and help you because you're helpless. And that's what we were, helpless. We were so tired from sliding, taking two steps up and sliding three steps back all day long.
Brutal. And it was those songs. I mean, that's inherent, that power that's inherent in the songs that allowed you to go up that brutal mountain. No one else made it but you and your friend, and then to come down.
The song is a very powerful thing, but mm-hmm. at that point in my life, being through high school and in the Marine Corps, I really kind of put some of those things in the back of my thought somewhere and didn't think about them too often. But the song is immense power, mm-hmm. like cadence of law, the thought, mm-hmm. immense power, mm-hmm. like the universe, immense power, mm-hmm. power we can't even begin to understand.
No,
just right there,
mystery.
Halfway between here and the stars, mm-hmm. still can't understand it, because nobody even looks over there. Big universe, nobody knows it's there.
Yeah, and do you want to invite our listeners to come on to your website, because they can email you and talk to you about, or you can answer questions for them they may have. Your website.
Hiditsula?
Yeah. How do you spell that? Hiditsula.
Well, there is a little place on it that says any message you want to, you can return a message to me.
And you can listen and read your stories and make comments and share. Dr. Wilson loves to share with people. He's homebound right now, temporarily. That's going to change, though. Are you going to be teaching some classes soon? I know your book is going to be published, Two Moons. That next week, if you want to come on again, I'd love to have you come on and talk about that.
Two Moons is coming really soon.
Yes.
And then
fascinating.
Publisher to come look at it a door anytime at home.
He hasn't come yet? Oh, this is his website. It's Hey Dutsula. Sorry. It's spelled HayDutsila. And you can just Google that. HayDutsila. And you can write directly to Dr. Wilson and learn so much more about what he knew in growing up as a child with these incredible elders. Oh, yes. I always just Google things.
You write straight to me.
Yes, and you will. And learn more about the songs and the prayers that are connected to the elements, the earth. There's one for each animal, for each tree, for each rock. It's just amazing. And the refinement and the subtlety of the connections as well. And we're speaking with Dr. Darryl Babe Wilson, and you're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.1 FM. And we have about 5 minutes left, and I hope he can come back next week because there's so much more. I just scratched the surface, truly, with him. But I do want to talk a little bit about Two Moon. And you write that it's a legend in your homeland of how the first earth, and how do you pronounce first earth?
Tecate, almost like the beer.
The Spanish beer. Tecate, first earth, got to be a dead planet. Our moon, the ancient ones of his existence, called this type of legend warnings. They talk of all of the life that was on the moon, just like here. Herds of animals, salmon, forests, children, flowers, birds, bugs, good intentions, and many dreams of forever. And how do you pronounce forever?
Kinemuma. That's
Kinemuma.
Where forever ends, Kinemuma begins.
And this is our future. We can become a dead planet. That's the warning.
The journey.
And at
we're
one
on.
Point, we did flourish. We did. We had many animals, and fewer people, and many redwood trees, and spruce, and hemlock. But anyway, this is Two Moon. You begin by talking about the other moon, the moon, and what happened, the other earth, actually.
The first moon, the thing we called a moon, and the old timers called it first earth, and they explained to us, just like she said, that everything was on the first earth, just like it was here. So soon before Christopher Columbus, there were herds of animals and flocks of birds and animals running everywhere, and rabbits jumping here and there, deer migrating, and buffaloes migrating, and salmon migrating, and all of the thing was working like a beautiful clock.
And then you talk about the two ways of thinking.
Yes, and I'm sorry I waited too long between. A lot of people can't wait for me to wait between talking.
Sorry.
Just the way it is. I did it at the college too. They say, "Hurry up and say something."
Oh no, I'm sorry. I just know news has to come on pretty soon.
But then the old timers told us what happened. It changed it from the first Earth to the Moon. Mm-hmm. Why? It's a dead planet. said, well, there was beautiful there. As beautiful as it is here. But then two thinkings came. The old timers didn't say thought, they said thinking. Two thinkings came. Nobody knows from where, but they came. One thinking looked at the beautiful wonder, said, this is mine. I'm going to use it for myself. The other thinking said, no, you must not use it for yourself. There are generations of children coming. You must take care of this place and dream about it and sing to it, nurture it. So those two thoughts, opposing thoughts, got in an argument over a span of years, arguing. Soon it turned into a war. And he took us out, the old timer took us out in the meadow, out in the field, and he said, look at the moon. He was telling us this story. Can you see that war on the moon?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Because we could see scratches all over it and pock marks here and there, and some of the eruptions looked like maybe bomb eruptions, and it's just really a scarred up moon. Yes, we can see the war. And he said, well, then he told us, he started painting a picture of this earth. The thought is here, the thought that's absent, the thought that's neglected, all of the problems with this world today. And he showed us how close it is to be like the first earth, that going to go to war, ugly thought, vanity running everything. Nobody thinking about life in a tree, or life in the water, mm-hmm. or life in a cloud. Everybody thinking it's just there because we're here, we're great. But that's not true. So anyhow, that neglect, Grandpa Ramsey called it disrespects. But because of all of the destruction that Grandpa Ramsey could see, he told me in 1961, he was a philosopher. He wasn't educated. I don't think he ever went to school. He didn't speak the white man language very good. He told me, Babe, the white man brought many diseases, but the bad one was disrespect. And he's looking over the land, seeing all the trees cut down, no more animals, no more geese. Flocks of geese used to be by the millions. Now if you see 10 geese, you're pretty lucky. No more deer herds. Nobody even knows deer migrate because they run over them and rattle their car before the deer gets across the street. They continue migrating. Nobody knows hummingbirds migrate because hummingbirds are just really secretive. Everybody knows butterflies migrate.
Yeah.
But I hardly see any of these things anymore. And sometimes we're really lucky if we can watch some of these things happen, like a salmon run.
We could do a whole show on migration and, well, pollinating. But the news has to come on now, Dr. Wilson.
Well,
but
can we talk about it next time?
Yes. Do you want to come on next week? I'd love to have you again.
Well, it'd be a good subject for sure.
We could start, yeah.
The migration.
Very important.
Okay.
Truth behind it.
Okay.
All right. We've been talking with Dr. Darryl Babe Wilson, and his sons are here as well. Do you want to say hi, guys?
Hey.
So, Tara. Oh. All right. Let's see what Palestinian news is here.
Is that an out?
And the arrests of hundreds of members of the Hamas party in the West Bank.
Thank you for listening. We'll be back next week.
Welcome to Palestine Today, a service of the International Middle East Media Center, www.imemc.org, for Thursday, September 2nd, 2010.